You may remember my guest from his appearances in Police Academy movies. No, he's not the one who makes all the weird sounds. He played the demented motorcycle gang leader Zed, and his name is Bob Goldthwait. He's only 25 years old, but he's already appeared in 3 Police Academy movies, the film One Crazy Summer, and co-starred with Whoopi Goldberg in Burglar. He has made frequent appearances on Late Night with David Letterman, and earlier this year had his own comedy special on Home Box Office called Share the Warmth. Goldthwait gained the nickname Bobcat during his mischievous teen years, and he first began writing comedy material right around the time he reached puberty, and he was already performing in clubs when he was 16 years old. Bob Goldthwait, welcome to Fresh
Air. Well, thank you very much. That was quite an elaborate research. I feel like I'm dead, actually. In fact, if I did die now, it'd be pretty good, because that's not a, you know, outside of being in the police lobotomies, that's pretty an impressive, array of things.
That's a good resume. You gave me an A on it. You gave me a little star.
Yeah, I didn't mark it and correct it. I guess that's kind of rude of me. Actually, thank you very much. It's really nice to be on Fresh Air, something I've never been accused of,
Okay, let's go back.
Let's bring it right to the toilet immediately. Let's bring it down to my level.
No, we're going right back to the beginning of your career. I'm sorry, you're going to have to rehash it all.
No. What is your target audience? I'm trying to figure out.
Intellectual? Absolutely.
Well, yeah, okay.
So,
and you're having me on.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. A little breath of fresh air. This is why we
I'm probably one of the most commercial guests they've ever had here. Now, this is public radio. There's no commercials.
Yeah, no commercials.
So, but like, if there was, it'd be what, like what? Guys?
Tweed suits, probably.
Really? Birkenstocks? I don't know. VW vans with psychedelic paintings?
Volvos. Sushi.
God's eyes?
What are those?
That's that when you take yarn and you keep doing it over and over again.
Oh, right.
The leading sellers.
It's the people who did that who have now grown up.
Oh, the people who have sold out and have no problem selling floppy disks now.
That's right. Come on. Well, you like this in high school.
I used to be a hippie. Now I work for Dow.
You're not old enough to have been a
hippie. No, I was never a hippie. I grew up in the 70s. I grew up listening to Casey and the Sunshine Band and this Journey, and it was a horrible time.
It must have been hard for you.
Yeah, well, then punk came along, and it was a real fresh breath there, you know?
What did you listen to when you were in high school?
Ramon, Sex Pistols.
The good stuff.
The oldies. You know, I get sentimental now. I go, God, they don't write a song like that, you know? I don't want to be a pinhead no more. Boy, those were the old days of music, you know? Now everybody Wang Chung tonight. What does that mean? You know? When I used to see a show, a guy came out, he overdosed, cut his chest up with razors. That was entertainment.
I can feel this slowly slipping out of my control here as we go on.
No, you'll be complete control.
I'm in complete control. Come on, will you like...
The bag of interviews. I'm in control now.
I don't recall feeling that way.
It'll be much painless on all of us if we just throw the notes out immediately.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right.
No, don't do that. I can't improv.
You have to be... All right, listen. Will you like this?
I am not a comedian. I'm a loud dancer. See, if I say something like that, it takes all the pressure off. You know, if I'm not funny, people go, hey.
You know what you remind me of? You remind me of this naughty little boy who kind of runs up to people, does something bad, gets caught at it, and then gets this little look on his face and says, please don't hit me. You know, please don't punish me.
Little Catholic boy. Oh, yeah, definitely. I think I was on Mary Hartley's program, and she says...
Who's Mary Hartley? Morning program. Sorry.
Janie Vacuumhead. I can tell you that I capitalized.
I listened to the radio in the morning.
Oh,
give me a break.
You missed last year when I was the biggest star ever in America.
I did. I was out of the country. I missed it completely. I'm sorry. I had you on anyway, didn't I?
Yeah, I can tell you people are dead who aren't even. Abe Vigoda, did you know he died when you were away?
Did he?
No, but you would know. You were gone for 4 years.
That's right. That's right.
That Clara woman died.
Does it hurt your voice to do that?
To do what? To
that
talk like me?
Yeah.
That voice. Let's burst the bubble. You know, if you hear Bob Goldthwait in the middle of the night, he'll talk like a floppy disk salesman. He'll go, hello, how are you?
See?
But, you know, I don't know. Do I talk like, does it hurt?
It sounds like, you know, if you have to do that for...
I don't know. You know, dissecting comedy crushes all the humor out of it, you know? I mean, Alice Cooper's career was over immediately after he was golfing with George Burns, you know? So... I'm a capitalist whore, and I'll milk this guy's as long as I can.
All right. Did you do this when you started out, when you were 17?
My ex has always been motivated by fear and terror. Yeah. I mean, early on, my performance, how lofty of me. I would do shows where I'd just read a Dear John letter or cry.
Cry?
And that would be my set.
Everyone would applaud.
Got a herring. I used to go, could I have a herring from the audience, please? And my roommate would be out there. And he goes, you want this one? I go, well, thank you very much. And then I'd gut it. And I remember one particular night where a woman started vomiting in the front row.
How pleasant.
Yeah, so I put the mic right down, you know, so everyone could share that.
Share that
the warmth
warped.
Of that. Yeah, the love of that. And then, yeah, it was my own fault, though. I let the herring go bad a little bit before. And then people are booing me, right? It was like, oh, but, you know, like all these red meat eaters are complaining that I got a herring on stage. You know, what do you think, a cow goes, I'm getting old. I'm getting old. Why don't you just shoot me now and make some patties out of my carcass?
No, they all die of cancer.
Well, they all die. Yeah. Vitamin C gets to them?
Something like that. Something
yeah, I know.
Like
hey, you know these animals are diseased.
Yeah. Well, what can I say? I eat them anyway.
Do you?
Yeah.
Really?
So, you don't? You're a vegetarian?
Yeah, actually. Just out of the fact that I'm 25 and I've got the colon of an 85-year-old man. That's a real pleasant thought. Do people eat lunch during the show?
No. Sometimes.
Thank God. Oh, my colon
There might be
hurts.
Some people that play it during breakfast. So,
yeah,
they've, so
I get out of bed at 25. I go, ugh. You know, that's not a good sign.
Was this the herring thing, was this before Boston or after
that
Boston?
That was in Boston.
Boston?
Yeah. I've always never really done traditional, you know. Boy, I have a hard time meeting women. Duh. You know.
Did you write the stuff that you do?
No, I like to steal as much stuff from the guys coming up.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, yeah. I go to an open mic night. I go, hey, I can use that. No one ever heard of this guy.
Are people stealing your stuff now?
I don't know. How can you steal babbling? You know, they're welcome to my act. It's fine. You know, I see people doing stuff like that I've done, but I don't get caught up in someone stole my act because if I only did the same thing every time I went on stage, yeah, I'd be mad.
Yeah.
But my act now is not like the HBO special. It always changes. There was way too much irresponsible stuff in my act on the HBO show because I made jokes about stabbing someone in the head, and I really don't find that funny. I find it pretty irresponsible because there's way too much violence anymore.
Is that why you decided to revamp now all the material that it said? I read that you.
I read that in the paper this morning.
Yeah, so did I.
I mean, I'll be using old ancient material whenever. See, I just don't do jokes, you know? Like, you hear a guy go, jokes to me are lies, right? It's a complete lie. A guy comes in and goes, I got a joke for you. Like that's not painful enough for me to hear jokes everywhere I go. Hey, you want to hear a joke? No, I would rather you slit open my intestines with a rusty razor. So I'll go, you know, okay, a guy goes, two guys walk into a bar, and the guy drinks a beer, and then this monkey puts his genitalia into the guy's drink. See, I'm cleaning it up,
yeah,
right?
Real clean.
Well, that's clean. I mean, I didn't say the
no,
D
no,
word,
no,
did
don't,
I?
No. You haven't said any of the words yet. Thank you.
So don't worry. I'm not going to do what I do on Howard Stern.
Good.
Heaven forbid you actually had ratings, you know.
What do you mean? We have ratings.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you don't compete.
Yes,
yeah,
so we don't have to compete for advertising time.
This is Gandhi radio, man. Passive radio.
So, passive-aggressive radio.
So
what are we talking about?
Yeah, so a guy, how jokes are lies, right? A guy walks into a bar, monkey sticks his genitalia in a drink, and then, and this is where they lose me, as soon as the guy goes, and then the guy says, well, if that really happened, you don't need a punchline. I mean, that would be hilarious to me. I'm crude. If I saw that, I would have blood coming out of my eyes. I'd be laughing so hard. So don't lie to me. Don't say two guys walk in a bar. They didn't walk in a bar. That didn't happen. Monkey genitalia and a beverage would make my head explode.
Mm.
So pretty much I've been trying to get rid of all those kind of jokes out of my ass.
You also don't do jokes about homosexuals. You don't do sexist jokes.
Yeah, no, actually, you know, on a given night, because I babble so much, sure. See, I'm everything. I am a racist. I am a sexist. But in reality, I don't act on those things. Like in my act, I say I have homosexual tendencies. Now, the key word is tendency. They last for a billionth of a second. I look at, I don't know who's been doing it for me lately, but Rob Lowe or something. I go, hey, I wouldn't mind kissing him. And then the other half of my brain goes, it's a guy! You know?
Right.
Stop it, you know? So, I mean, I have those things, and I don't act on it. But, you know, it's kind of weird. It's just, there's just a lot of homophobia in the clubs today. And I'm not above accidentally, you know, having a cheap gay joke.
Mm.
But I'm everything. I mean, I'm a mass of contradictions, and I'm full of it.
My guest is comedian Bob Goldthwait.
I'm a loud dancer.
You're a loud, should I say that? Loud, my,
yeah,
my
I'm
guest
out of
has
the comedy.
Been...
Actually, lately everyone's going, this screaming comedy thing. Well, how do you convey anger? Am I supposed to go up there and go, hi, I'm really mad, duh, you know? Or, hi, I'm really scared, you know, you're a great crowd, duh.
Do you have to wind yourself up to get on stage?
No, I have to buy a paper, you know? I mean...
You're gonna get angry. Did you watch President Reagan's speech?
No, but I called up a buddy of mine, and he gave me his version of it, which was much more entertaining anyways. But, see, this is kind of funny because there might be peace in Nicaragua, and I was going to be doing a benefit for the AIDS of, you know, for... out in Los Angeles to trying to get some lobbying to stop Contra-Aid, right? And like I'm talking to these guys promoting it now, and they're going, "Well, I don't know. What are we gonna do if peace breaks out? It was just gonna be such a good show. What are we gonna do?" You know. So we're wondering if peace breaks out or not.
Maybe it will. Then you can make jokes about
peace. It's a frightening thought. About peace? I don't know. See, like, in my act, I'm saying, you know, I've got a bigger chance of getting killed by dying from homelessness than a Stalinista, like, coming up and beating me to death with a stick.
Or riding in an airplane. You've done routines about air traffic controllers.
Well, not routines. I did more about the fact that Reagan fired the union, which is totally illegal. And everyone seems so perplexed why there's so many airplane crashes. Well, I don't know. Maybe Walt the janitor is not qualified to land a Boeing 707. You know, I think a guy's, like, experience should be a little bit more than his ability to win Space Invaders, you know, or Pong to land planes. But I don't blame Reagan, because blaming him for the way things are is like blaming Ronald McDonald when you get a bad cheeseburger. You know, neither of them run the company.
Now, I have heard that joke or that line now about 5 times on
from
different
me?
Yeah, a different.
Well, it's, you know, so I'm not that spontaneous.
No, but you've had to do about 200 different, more than 200 interviews in the past year?
Oh, I do. Oh, probably over a couple hundred.
Yeah.
So when I come across a line that actually says how I feel, I tend to like remember it, you know? That's how I work. Because I think people think I'm going to come on here and, you know, come on the end and go, "Hey, how you doing? Pull my finger," you know, and have exploding shoes, which reminds me. On the way down here, we said something really funny. It was a clown supply house. Seriously, it was like, and we're just thinking like a bad day. Like a clown comes in and goes, "What is this? These shoes, they don't explode." My God, I'm in the middle of my set. My exploding pants don't work. I go, "Okay, I'll go to the shoes." Nothing. Thank God I had a pie. You know, thank God I had a pie. What do you think you're dealing with? Some, you know, some clown ass? Some, what am I, some bozo? Okay, I'll take a pound of the rubber dog poop and some of the funny balloon animals.
Right. In these interviews, people always bring up the Police Academy movies. I mean, let's face it.
How a lot of people got to know me, unfortunately.
I did.
Yeah, well, see, like, but I've been in clubs for a long time, and then I made the police lobotomies. I'd make a lot of fun about those, but I did them. See, so then I shouldn't really make fun of them. You know, and I continue to do them. Although they're going to go to work on Police Lobotomy 5, and I won't be in it.
Oh.
Yeah, that's so sad.
Very sad.
I'm really bummed out.
You used to say that you said that you took these movies because, well, what, a truck pulls up and full
of
money?
That was an extremely capitalist statement on my part. It was actually, I was being interviewed by this pinhead at the time, who was obviously extremely into wealth, and I'd be denying. See, you give a jerk money, and he's still a jerk, because I'm a jerk, and I've had money, and I've been broke, so I know that much. But the reason I do Police Academy is when I started comedy, I didn't walk in on a Saturday night and say, "Hi, I'm Bobcat, how you doing? I'd like to go on before your headliner, and I like to get paid a lot." No, when I started, I did like Monday night in front of a bunch of drunks at 2 o'clock in the morning. So if I allegedly want to make movies a career, I take every film. I've never yet turned down a Sidney Pollack film.
Have you been offered a Sidney Pollack film?
No, oh, well. I don't say, "Sid, sorry, I got to make Police Academy 5.
But it did give you the chance to get that exposure, people who may not have seen you in clubs.
It's like being on Happy Days, you know? That's about the equivalent of it. But allegedly, I might be meeting David Lynch to do a small part in one of his movies. So you know it's going to be upball. It's going to be real screwball, light, frothy comedy. You get the
cat
and
the
David
director
Lynch
of
together.
Eraserhead and Blue Velvet.
Blue Velvet.
Which is a good movie last year. Were you able to improvise on these movie sets at all?
No, only Burglar. Burglar, I improvised all my scenes, well, with the help of the director. I mean, it takes much more skill to let a guy riff than it does to try to control him. So Burglar was a riot, and on the police lobotomy, see, I would still be making them if there wasn't screaming fights, you know. "Please, can I have your cooperation? We're trying to make an irreverent teen comedy here." Mm. You know. See, police academies just make a lot of cash. So, like, every single bad gas joke is weighed very heavily. And they come there with a sheet and they say, "Okay, we got to show this many breasts and we need this many car crashes and this many racial slurs, and then we'll have a hit movie."
Yeah. I'd like to talk about your new movie that's coming up in after we take a short break.
You're more than welcome to it. I have no say in it. I'm powerless over you.
I'm Leanne Hansen. My guest is comedian Bob Goldthwait, and
See, I think I'm getting by.
I'm getting by. I'm all right. And
I'm not tearing your head off.
Not at all. Not intimidating in the least. And I think this is fresh air. My guest is Loud Dancer. He is well known for his appearances in Police Academy movies. He's also performed in clubs throughout his career, had a special on HBO, and has a new movie coming up called Hot to Trot. Is that the name of it?
Yeah, it's based on a true story, me with a talking horse.
Like Mr. Ed?
Mr. What?
You're too young.
I'm just trying to plead innocent. You know, Hollywood just full of so many new ideas. It's me and a talking animal. So I spent 3.5 months with this diseased animal breathing his pyrrhea breath in his face.
Did you get
the horse is really cool. It's so weird. People hear me talking about Don. That's his name. And I go, well, you know, Don, you know, and they're like going, Bobcat, it's an animal.
Are you sort of a Bobcat personality?
I'm a Bobcat.
Again, you know?
No, I play, I'm more like a Judd Nelson in this one. I'm really good looking. Suddenly I got handsome. No, I'm a dirt bag. I made a career out of being a dirt bag. We're doing, I've told this story, too, about how the horse wouldn't look at me.
No, I haven't heard this one.
Oh, okay. Well, humor's antidote 1210 of a continuing series. The horse wouldn't look at me, so to get him to look at me, because I'm a guy, and that's pretty boring stuff for a horse, they would put another horse 20 feet behind him. And so the whole time he'd be going like, hey, who's that? Look at that. Look at that slice of heaven.
Reaction shots.
I felt like, you never see the horse behind me. Actually, it was like talking to my agent, you know. It's like, hey, there's Bruce Willis. His career's taken off. It's not like you.
Bruce Willis was originally supposed to be in Burglar, right?
He was the lead, and Whoopi played a lesbian, and I ended up playing Whoopi's part. And then he ended up doing Wine Cooler Ads or something.
Right. Now, this part I had heard was originally supposed to be played by Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
The part in Hot to Trot?
Yeah, I've yet to ever get a part that was originally designed for me. I'm like a scab, you know? Like anybody.
You are not.
I'm a scab. I'm like anybody, you know, I'll be doing Coors ads next week at this rate. Anyone gets fired, I walk in.
You have, you're married now, you have a little girl. You're going to start doing daddy material, like Robin Williams' daddy
material? Yeah, I'm going to exploit my child for some cheap laughs.
Well,
that's
you know.
The reason I had a kid, because I needed a new 10 minutes.
No.
It's a very hard fence I'm on, because I always have a feeling if you talk about something on stage, you're going to lose it. But on the other hand, I can only talk about what's going on with me, so it's really hard to talk. I do talk about my kid and family. Also, I like to talk about Anne occasionally, just because if I don't, I get these misguided women backstage, and that's kind of bizarre, because I never had a groupie when I bagged groceries for a living.
Right.
You know?
Did you do
and
that
I'm
in Syracuse?
And pretty much I'm insulted when women are attracted to me because I've been on stage, because what you're saying is that you didn't hear anything I had to say.
Mm-hmm. Do people expect you to be on when they
no,
meet
because,
you on the street?
No, because I can really suck on stage, so I don't think they expect me to be humorous all the time.
Oh, do they run up to you and yell in your face or something like that?
Yeah, you know, that's real pleasant. It's usually like when I'm out at a real nice restaurant. Crazy man! Yeah, I'm real crazy. How's your gazpacho, dear?
Do you do that voice in front of your daughter? She's, what, 7 months old?
Do I do that voice?
I can imagine it being rather frightening for a small child.
The way I act is comes out of terror and fear. And when I'm around my kid, very rarely am I nervous.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a chemical thing going off when you're around a kid. You have no say in it. It makes you a wimp.
Yeah.
It's a physical thing. It can't be mental.
Because
you could give the biggest jerk a baby and they'd start cooing and stuff. So I don't think I don't know. Being around a kid is pretty spiritual, wild stuff.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about things on stage, and then I felt bad afterwards because we had a pretty rough go of our delivery, and I was in there, and we had a C-section. Mm-hmm. And this really did happen. A woman in the room said, would you like to cut the cord? And I looked at her, and I said, I really said this. I said, isn't there anyone a little more qualified? I mean, why am I the guy you want to give a sharp thing to around an infant right now?
But you did it.
Oh, I cut the cord. It's like, it's set up like, it's so easy. Right. They do it all the time. You know, they could have a janitor going, hey, Gern, what are you doing? Get in here. Clip this kid. So then, but also my baby didn't go through the, you know, the Play-Doh Fun Factory of life. She didn't get her little head squished. So she came out just smiling and a big, big smile. Very wild. And it really made me PO'd. See, I'm trying to clean myself up for you.
It made you angry.
But see, like, if I swore, I'd drum up so much more publicity because, oh, he was on the radio and he was so offensive. And see, I'll have to do 5 of these appearances to get the same impact of one disgusting one.
Right. But see, dirty words are funny.
Well, dirty words, I don't know if they're funny. It's the only way. I mean, I use the same language you would use if you drop something very heavy on your foot.
Right.
In my performance. You know, I don't talk about my genitals all that much. I seem to hold it a lot up there, but I was talking to someone about that, and someone was talking about how a lot of people do that, a lot of guys, Pryor and Robin Williams, and they noticed that I am kind of fond of that behavior, too. And without getting lofty, someone said, well, it's because, like, you know, you're totally nude up there, you know? So I think that's probably it. Sometimes I tell people a lot more than I wish I had.
Mm. Did Robin Williams, established comics, give you any advice when you were starting out?
Yeah, it was pretty funny because, like, in my HBO special, I talked about Stallone not going to Vietnam.
You say he went to Sweden to coach a volleyball team?
Yeah, he did. He went to Sweden and taught girls gym soccer or volleyball or something. I don't know. Yeah, and so in the special, I said that in Rambo 2, he goes, do we win this time? And I was gonna, what, you know, the girls' volleyball championships? No, you're going to pretend you went this time. You know, let's face reality. And so he makes $1 billion after exploiting the Nam vets, you know, and I found that pretty evil. And then, you know, I talked about his porno movie, too, because I have that on tape, and if you can get a hold of it, it's pretty hilarious. You see everything, and then he does this hippie weird dance after he smokes pot. It's kind of funny. And so I talked about these things on my special. And Robin, I call up Robin, right? And he says to me, no, he called me, actually, when we were in the hospital with my baby and stuff. And he says, well, this special's going out, and, you know, and I told him about the Stallone bit. And he goes, well, come on, Bob. You know, do you really think Stallone has got the time to sit there and watch your special? Because, you know, also I said that we were talking about the Reagan stuff. And he says, Stallone's not going to watch your special. Don't worry about it. Day after the show goes on the air, everywhere I went, I get these messages. Call Sylvester Stallone, right? So I figured he just wanted to shoot the breeze.
Oh, you know, sure.
Me being the breeze. So he told my manager he wanted to kill me and stuff. But I would have, I would have taken Stallone's call, but I would have wimped out. I would have said, geez, I'm sorry. Or on the other hand, I would have said, listen, you're a fascist, you know? So I didn't talk to Stallone and I figure the more I talk about it, the less chance he has of hurting me or one of my family members. So I take a lot of opportunity to try to talk about him.
To
you know?
Take it out.
But I don't think he would actually hurt me. I'm sure if, you know, it'd be just some night owls and I get my Achilles tendon slit in an alley or something like that.
Every night you have to face.
But yeah, so I always call Robert on that. I call him up, oh, duh, Sylvester Stallone won't hear this.
Right.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Mark. Thanks for the advice.
Every night you have to face a sea of people, faces, you know. Do you ever have anxiety dreams about this?
No, I have anxiety attacks up there. I mean, I get paid to have a breakdown every day. It cracks me up. You know, some days I sit there with the baby and the hibachi and you know, hanging out, being real mellow. And I go out there, I go, you know, maybe I don't feel like having a breakdown tonight. You know, maybe I just want to talk to you about computers.
And they say, no, you have to go out there and have the breakdown.
Well, that's how I feel. I talk about computers, you know. I just, you know, I don't have this obligation to my crowd to be a nut. If I did, I'd have to quit because I don't feel like doing old stuff all the time.
How did you get on The Tonight Show?
I didn't ever audition for The Tonight Show. The man who, he's been a really cool guy. He would see me perform and he would say, I wouldn't ask him. I wouldn't say, hey, can I come on the show? Because I know I'm not a Tonight Show act. But Joan Rivers put me on because it was like her last coup before she took off. 3 days before she left, she had me on the air. And the producer, I think, the producer or the director was out of town because that was another thing.
Yeah.
Because he called up my manager afterwards and he said, over my vacationing body, huh?
You've done Letterman as well, David Letterman.
Yeah.
So. Do you have to do different stuff for that show? I mean...
Well, no, I actually don't know what I'm doing. On The Tonight Show, I just came out and cried and explain that my dog, I was introduced as Bob Goldthwait and his dog Jojo, and then I just came out and cried and explained that my dog got hit by a truck earlier that day.
And everyone thought that was hysterical.
No, they were all sad. And then I had a man come out who I said was my dad and made him jump through a hoop, and I fed him snacks, and then I played God Bless America. And he rode around a tricycle holding American flags.
Hmm. You do Elvis material. Oh, you've done it.
I've talked about him. Well, yeah, I don't know. What is going on now? Did he cut a new record or something?
No, he's been dead 10 years.
Well, what? Is he going to come out? Is he the phoenix? Does he come out of his ashes?
Reading some of the newspapers, you'd think so. Yeah, because, you know, the portraits of him about what he would look like, what he was 50. There was even an astrologer who did a thing about what Elvis would be doing.
Well, that thing's happening Sunday. Maybe Elvis is going to come.
The harmonic convergence.
The harmonic convergence is the reappearance of Elvis Presley.
You think so?
I don't know. I was in Los Angeles in there. Somebody, you know, the highway shooting. Someone threw a pit bull into another guy's window and killed him.
Oh, how pleasant.
No, that's not true, but I faked out.
You did,
you took the bait.
You did, I did. No wonder they call you.
That hook hurts.
What do they call you, the pit bull of comedy?
No, there's a guy I know they call a pit bull of comedy, actually. Yeah. He's had that name for a long time.
You did that voice that sort of, you know, yuppie. You do an excellent Elvis impression.
I don't do it.
You do.
I was doing a show. People are like, people who listen and watch you will say anything. So that's
it's not
me.
True. It's not true.
I got off stage. I've been doing Bono from U2, and some poor kid. She was really sweet. She goes, "You sing better than U2," and it was so endearing and sweet. But it is that blindness people get when you're performing, and it's scary. It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Because you can, on a given night, if I want to get beat up mentally, I can go out and find that person in the audience, grab them and say, "Tell me I suck." And they'll go, "Boy, I hate you. I work with people like you. You are so offensive." And I'll go, "Yeah, I am worthless." Or then on that night, if I wanted to find someone who would just go, "Everything you do is wonderful," I could find them. And that's why I tend to hide from my fans a lot, because I don't want to be told either up or down.
All right. We only have a couple of seconds left. Do you think you're going to age gracefully?
I always talk about that.
No, huh?
No. I don't worry about that. I was talking about my daughter, you know. It's like, I'll be going, "How come your little friends never, you know, come to the door? Why do they pick you up at the end of the driveway?"
Okay. My guest has been comedian Bob Goldthwait.
Loud dancer!
Loud dancer Bob Goldthwait. I'm Leanne Hansen.
Thanks for having me on, Leanne.
You're absolutely welcome, Bob. I'm Leanne Hansen, and this is Fresh Air. You must be quiet now. I'm Leanne Hansen, and this is... You have to be quiet. Fresh Air. On our next show, I'll speak with Broadway composer Cy Coleman.
Oh, you will not. You're a liar.
I will, so I hope you can join us. Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. This is NPR, National Public Radio.